Okay, well, the first answer. This is a really hostile interview. This is, okay, so.
Listen up. There's only one way to end off summer, and that's at the Victory Square Block Party. On September 1st, come bid adieu to the warm weather at the summer's best party. It's fun, it's free, and we want you there. Victory Square Block Party features performances by Kim Mortal, Biawana, Love Goon, Sunrise Social, Sylvia Rath, Lucid, Oblomov, and Tonk. Plus, there'll be tasty food vendors and a raffle with kick butt prizes. That's September 1st from 2 to 9 p.m. See you there.
Well, I always look forward to the fall. I love September. It's my favorite month.
That's not an answer.
This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus.
Hi, and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Jeannie Sisko Meth. She is the author of Bullyproofing You, Improving Confidence and Personal Value from the Inside Out. You can find her website, bullyproofingyoubook.com, where you can get a free copy of the book if you pay for shipping. And we'll just let you know a little bit about Jeannie. She is a revolutionary expert on bullying. She's a lifelong teacher. She's author of 3 books. She's a parent, a cancer survivor, and a bullying survivor. Welcome to the show, Jeannie.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be this expert on bullying?
Yes, absolutely. When I was younger, I had quite a few learning disabilities. And so I couldn't see. I was legally blind, unbeknownst to my family, for quite some time. And then I had a speech impediment because I had auditory dyslexia, which means words get jumbled up. So I had a speech impediment. And I was also 6 foot tall by this 8th grade. So I was literally a very large target. And because I grew so fast, I was very clumsy. And I mean, so you can just imagine this tall girl with Coke bottle glasses, kind of klutzy, can't speak very well. And just, I did not fit in at all. And so I was a pretty big target for bullies. And they told me in elementary school that I would never make it through high school because I was too stupid. And for a long time, I believed them. And then I realized that they didn't decide where I went, I decided.
And what was there, like a moment in time that gave you that realization, that insight that you get to decide, or did it kind of evolve?
It was kind of a slow hunch. It evolved over time, but I can tell you the moment I realized that there were things that I could do to take control of my life. And I remember it very clearly. I was laying on the floor in the living room working on some homework, and just, oh man, homework was such a struggle for me. And so I remember getting up and walking into the kitchen to get some milk and cookies or a snack. And then I came back, and when I laid back down on the floor, I was on the other side of my book. So my book was upside down, and all of a sudden I was able to read it. And I don't know why, but upside down and backwards, I could read my book. Whereas if I held it, you know, the way most people do to read, I had very, very difficult time reading. And so I was so excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can read. And I was so excited for the next day for English class, because we were all taking turns reading a book. And she calls for volunteers, and my hand shoots up, and she's like, looks at me like, you never volunteer. Wow. And so she called on me, and I grabbed my book, and I was holding it upside down and backwards, and I was reading, and I was so excited, until the kid next to me pointed at me and laughed at me and said, oh, she's so stupid, her book's upside down. Oh. And I was devastated and just kind of trailed off and and sat down. But the neat thing was this was in the 80s, and I don't know if they still do or not, but at that time you would cover your book with different types of things. And so I went home and got our paper grocery bags and cut them up and covered all my books, and then wrote on the outside biology and, you know, and math and all of that, English. So it looked like all of my books were right side up. And they couldn't tell that they were upside down and backwards inside the cover. And so that's how I made it through school, was finding little things that I could do that were different from what other people did, but they helped me.
Wow, good for you. That's smart. And thank goodness you discovered that. And then you put yourself through university as a single mother,
yes,
struggling and going to school with learning disabilities. On top of all of that, plus trying to work, I think it was 3 jobs.
Yeah, it was a rough time, but I knew that if I had dreams, right? And I believe that my dreams can pull me into my future. And so I would dream, and I would drive up around the Capitol where there were $1 million homes and envision my daughter coming out of one of them someday. And I'd like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. I can find a way. I can make it happen. And so daily, taking those daily steps to move me closer to where I wanted to be instead of where I was. And I came up with the saying that even hummingbird steps count. Uh-huh. Because sometimes it felt like it was such a small little step, but it was still in the right direction. And so it helped me get through that year and become a teacher and empower others with the knowledge that I had learned, because I have found that there are quite a few people who do not learn the traditional way. And so I was a high school teacher for 17 years, and I worked at an alternative high helping other kids, you know, who were struggling in school with some of the tips and techniques that I had learned as a student.
Beautiful. And so that's the way of learning, but then you also were able to help with bullying. So in reading your book, we're talking about bully-proofing you, improving confidence and personal value from the inside out. One of the first steps is starting to believe in yourself and having more self-confidence, so that the things that people say to us and the opinions other people say have of us don't have the same negative impact. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The problem comes when people allow someone else to decide who they are, to define their value, because they allow them to tell them who they are. And so I believe that we need to decide, first of all, who we are. We decide if I'm lovable. I decide if I'm special. I decide who I am. And then other people outside validate me. The problem is that as human nature, we are drawn to the negative. We are drawn to the dark. We are drawn to the depressing. But if you open your eyes and start looking around, you will realize that there are people who are in your corner all along, who are cheering you on and encouraging you, and who want you to be successful, who want you to love yourself and take care of yourself. The problem is we don't always listen to them. We listen to the negative naysayers. And so I invite people, there's quite a few action steps in the book that they can do, that you can do to start improving your personal value and belief in yourself.
Thanks, Jeannie. So I'm curious, it sounds like you came from quite a loving background. You grew up on a farm in Washington, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
So there you had the connection to your family and the connection to the animals. I can imagine working in an alternative school, you saw a lot of kids that came from families where there was probably very little value in who they were as a person. So what kind of, how long did it take for those kids to be able to develop self-confidence as opposed to someone who already came from a pretty decent family and even still is struggling with self-confidence?
Yeah, the weird thing was that even though I should have had this great foundation, I didn't. I didn't have a good foundation. It should have been there, but it wasn't. And it's the same thing with my students. I will have my students would say, well, nobody loves me. And I'm like, that's not true. You have people who love you. The problem is that you're looking at very specific people and they're not loving you the way you want to be loved. And so often we put a sticker on somebody that says, this is how you're supposed to love me. And if you don't show your love in that specific way, then that means you don't love me. And the problem is that we will never, ever control someone else. It's hard enough to control myself, let alone someone else, right? Mm-hmm. But if I start defining, if I allow for more shades of gray, and I ask someone else, you have said you love me. How do you show that? How do I know that coming from you? And then it comes into a belief and a trust situation. I have to believe when someone tells me that they love me. And I truly believe that every parent is doing the absolute best that they can, even the ones that are doing a horrible job. They're doing the best they can with what they know and how they were raised. And if we can educate and enlighten and let them know that there's a better way, then some of those actions and behaviors will be negated from parenting. I remember telling my students, you don't have to go to a family reunion at the point of the mountain. The point of the mountain here in Utah is the state penitentiary. And so many of my students had family members there, both sides, mother and father, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, that, you know, they would plan on going to the state penitentiary because that's all they knew. And all it took was somebody believing in them that they listened to, and then somebody believing in them that could show them that there was a different way. Now, I was not the only teacher at my school. Everybody there played a part. Everybody there had a role. And I just feel very, very blessed to have been able to have a role and been able to help them.
Beautifully said. Thank you.
Welcome to UBC Theater and Film's 2019-2020 season, a season subscription filled with passion and power. The shows this year are Beckett 19, or Some Such Semblance, by Samuel Beckett, directed by Gerald Vanderwood.
Timothy Finley's The Wars, adapted by Dennis Garnham, directed by Lois Anderson.
The Changeling, by Thomas Middleton and William Rowley, directed by Luciana Silvestre Fernandez.
Old Stock, a refugee love story, created by Hannah Moscovich, Christian Berry, and Ben Kaplan. A Push Festival co-production.
And finally, Revolt She Said, Revolt Again by Alice Birch, directed by Sloane Thompson.
Advantages to subscribing? You enjoy the Push International Performing Arts Festival show at a considerable discount. You get Naked Cinema for free, half price, prepaid parking, consistent and cheaper seats. Consider booking for opening nights and join us for the reception.
For more information and to subscribe, visit us at theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
We are speaking right now with Jeannie Sisko Meth. She is the author of Bullyproofing You, Improving Confidence and Personal Value from the Inside Out. And we are recording this interview in February of 2019. So right now, if you're listening live, you can go to bullyproofingyoubook.com and get a free copy of the book. You just have to pay for shipping. The intention is for this to be an ongoing promotion. So you're welcome to check it out, even if you're listening years in the future. But just to let you know that this is being recorded in February 2019, bullyproofingyoubook.com. So can I ask you, Jeannie, why are you giving this book away for free?
Because it is a powerful tool that has helped so many people. And I have received letters and emails from all over the world, places that I have never been, but my book has been. And people have found great value in it. And I want to make sure that more people have access to it. I received a LinkedIn email message, whatever you call it, from a gentleman in Copenhagen, Denmark, who told me how much value and asked, can I use it with my my book club. He said, this is just a valuable tool, and it has given me the strength to follow my dreams, to pursue what I want to do in life instead of just settling. And if it can help him, it's helped parents in Japan and other places, you know, that kids who have been suicidal. When I was a teacher, every year we would have a student who would pass away, either to gang violence or to a suicide or a drug overdose. And I realized I had to do something. I could no longer just sit by. And now with the mass shootings that are happening, all of those are preventable. They're 100% preventable. And I think that my book, I'm hoping that my book can be a small part of that prevention. And if I can get it into more people's hands, then we can make a difference.
Thank you for that. Now, you mentioned the mass shootings. And so how can we talk for a minute about how this is preventable?
Yeah, absolutely. The bullying that happens on the outside creates a bully on the inside. And it's the bully on the inside that is the most devastating. And in fact, that's the current book that I just finished writing, and it's going through its edit, and we're taking it to a publisher in New York. But it's about the bully on the inside, the voices on the inside that tell us we're worthless, that tell us we're no good, that tell us we can't do anything, that tell us we might as well just check out. That's the bully that, in my opinion, is the most insidious and the most dangerous, and the one that must be stopped.
Hmm. So that's our own self-talk.
Correct. Our own self-talk. And if you look at, now I have not met any of the mass shooters. I need to say that right up front. But I have met many students through my school who were headed that way. And my belief is hurt people hurt people. Somebody who feels good and who is a contributing member of society and has dreams that they're working for and going towards, they don't hurt people. It's people who are hurting physically, mentally, emotionally, that lash out at others. And so if we can start to heal that pain, then we can stop these types of things. But it starts with one person at a time, starting to believe in themselves, starting to dream, and starting to take action on those dreams.
So if the person doing the mass shooting is feeling bad about themselves, what can we as individuals, because you said earlier, we can't control anyone else. And if we're not the ones going to be a mass shooter, how can we contribute to those other people not becoming mass shooters?
Yeah, beautiful question. The first thing I'll address is parents. You know, parents, because parents try to take care of their children, they want the best for their children, but they also contribute to that mentality. And I want to have you think for a moment, the last time you walked in front of a mirror, or the last time, you know, you didn't have your makeup on or your hair fixed, what kind of things did you say? Were they positive? Were they uplifting? Or did you tear yourself down? Most times people tear themselves down. And so when I'm speaking with a group of parents, or even a group of entrepreneurs or business people as well in HR, I will tell them, the next time you get up, the next morning you're up and you walk by that glass, that pane of glass or that mirror or whatever, then, and you haven't fixed your hair, I want you to stop and pause and say, check me out. Check out this do I've been working on all night long. I am looking fine, right? Because we don't do that. We say bad things to ourselves. And then we try to get our children to say positive things about themselves. It starts with us. And so if we can accept us, how we are and where we're at, and make strides every day to get better, then so will our children.
So it sounds like taking better care of ourselves and loving ourselves more is going to be make us role models. Well, we're already role models, whether we want to be or not.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And if you can start loving yourself right where you're at, whether you're 5 pounds overweight or you're underweight or your hair's a mess, you know, I don't think I've ever let me rephrase that. I've met very few people, probably a handful of people, that when I meet them are happy with where they're at. Most people, if they have straight hair, wish they had curly hair. And if they have curly hair, they wish they had straight hair. Or if they have short hair, they wish they had long hair. You know, or they wish they were a different size than they do. You know, and I'm not saying to not change, to not want to get better, to not strive. I absolutely believe in striving and getting better. I also believe in accepting yourself right where you are and loving yourself right where you are while you are in the process of getting better.
Mm-hmm. So that's all the inner kind of work. What do we do about the external things? So whether we're a student in a school and there's someone who's targeting us, or maybe we're an adult and we're being targeted at work in some way or in our friendship circle, how do we deal with the external bullies?
Beautiful. First of all, if there's somebody that you tend to hang out with, stop hanging out with them. If it's somebody who is pursuing you at school or at work, then there are some specific one-liners, and I go through them in depth in the last part. I think it's the last two or three chapters of my book. But some of those are one-liners that you can say that will stop a bullying attack. The number one thing that you can do is ask a question. And that question has to make them stop and think. Because when somebody is in pain and they're lashing out, they're in their reptilian brain, their brainstem. They're not thinking and processing, they're reacting. And so if you ask a question, it causes them to think, which moves them into instead of just a reactive stage, it moves them into an action stage. And so if you're at school, you can ask them, hey, do you know what's for lunch today? Or what's your favorite class period? Or, you know, what time did you get to school? Those are just some questions that you can use that will stop a bullying situation and allow the bully to save face as well as yourself. You don't need to attack them back. All you need to do is ask a question. If it's at work, then there are other questions that you can use that you can, you know, tailor-made for those scenarios. But the biggest thing is ask a question.
So there's a situation that I've been dealing with. I'm not calling it bullying, but it's being called bullying. So I'm just wondering, I don't know, your advice. Like, I'm okay with, I'm not being attacked or, you know, being name called, but it's just this kind of social getting other people to try and like make a division between that side being on that person's side and me over on the other side. And I'm kind of like, well, I told this person in my first early on in the working time, I said, you know, I'm not here to be liked. I'm here to do my job. And if you have a problem with that, well, that's your problem. So I was actually surprised that the person would continue with what some other people are calling bullying behavior, because I'm not an easy target.
Right.
Or at least maybe I am. I don't see myself as an easy target. I don't see myself as someone who doesn't stand up for themselves. So I'm just wondering what your take on that is.
So there's a couple of things. People bully, like I said, because they're in pain. They also bully because they want to bring someone else down, that crabs in a bucket mentality I'm sure you've heard of. Mm-hmm. This person may see you as a threat to them or what they want to accomplish, or they may be trying to, they see you as a popular person and they don't like that. They feel that as a threat. And that would be my guess, because they're trying to cause a divide in the workplace between it's you versus her or him, you know, them versus us mentality. And they're trying to draw lines. And they have, many times people will bully through email. You know, you hear cyberbullying quite mm-hmm. a bit, that social media, anything where it's not face to face, because it's much easier to vent on someone in writing than it is face to face. And in my opinion, that's the way cowards do it, because it's safer, or they think it's safer. And so my my thought, this is called the spiritual soul show. And so I would invite you to pray for her. First of all, remember that she is a person, that she is in pain, or he, I apologize. This person is in pain. And I would say a prayer for them. And I would say a prayer for you as well. If it starts to escalate and bother you and hurt you, then write it out on paper and then burn it. I call it a write and burn, where things happen, you know, and you can invite this person to do the same thing. It sounds to me like you're upset. It sounds to me like you're hurting. It sounds to me, you know, however you feel, put your spin on it, and then invite them to do something more healthy, which is what I call a write and burn, where you write down all those negative feelings. I feel angry, hurt, frustrated, you know, upset, bullied, whatever it is, because. And then you just write it out. Just let your pen fly. Don't worry about spelling. Don't worry about if you can read it or not, because you're getting the energy out of you. You're getting the emotion out of you and down on paper. And then you're going to tear that piece of paper out. And I like to burn it. I'm a bit of a pyro. I like to go out on my back porch and burn it. You can also tear it up into little pieces and throw it away in the trash, shred it. But you want to get it away from you. So you want to get those emotions up and out of you and then away from you and give yourself a chance to heal. It's kind of like a splinter that the end gets, you know, broken off and it starts to fester and hurt. There's something inside of this person that is festering and hurting, and they're taking it out on you instead of dealing with the issue and getting rid of the issue.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Montreal's electropop duo Milk and Bone play the Fox Cabaret on August 30th. Tickets are on sale now at eventbrite.com and Red Cat Records. Presented by MRG Concerts, CITR Radio, and Discorder Magazine.
This summer, take a walking tour of the outdoor art on the UBC campus. Since the late 1940s, works of outdoor art have been collected by the university to enrich the campus environment. Together, these artworks give voice to multiple stories about the history of UBC and Vancouver, and are part of an ever-evolving narrative about art, space, and place, and our own sense of ourselves. There's guided tours featuring highlights of the collection. They vary in length from 1 to 1.5 hours. You can also enjoy a self-guided tour at your own pace. Download the Outdoor Art Tour Book or pick up a copy at the gallery. Suggested routes take about 20 minutes to walk, while a full tour takes about 3 hours. To find out more, or to book a tour, go to belkin.ubc.ca and search for Outdoor Art Tours.
We are speaking with Jeannie Cisco Meth. She is the author of Bullyproofing You, Improving Confidence and Personal Value from the Inside Out. You can find her website, bullyproofingyoubook.com, where you can get a free copy of the book. You just have to pay for shipping. Again, that's bullyproofingyoubook.com. Now, Jeannie, there's so many things that I actually wanted to ask you a question about knowing when friends are bullying you versus knowing when maybe you're just being oversensitive. But I also, you were in the military, and I just feel like that's like so random that I'm like, wow, like, do you think maybe this is where you got some of your self-discipline from, or what even inspired you to? Just sign up for the military.
Well, I've always been a very organized person, and I've also physically challenged myself above and beyond most people, let alone women especially. But that, I believe that comes from being academically challenged. And so I found a lot of accomplishment in the physical side of it. I am 6 foot tall, you know, and I grew up in a dairy farm. So I grew up bucking hay bales and carrying grain and taking care of cows and calves and building fence and, you know, so very physical work. So I'm much stronger than many women, and I'm much stronger than some men. Or I should say I used to be, because now I'm 52 years old. And so I loved challenging myself physically. And the Army I was at, I had the opportunity when I was at college to work with the ROTC program, and they were actually rappelling off of the psychology building. And I was like, wow, that's really scary. I want to do that, and was immediately hooked and absolutely loved it. And from there joined, and I went to basic training because I didn't think it was right to not do something that my soldiers would be doing. And so that's why I went to basic training at Fort Dix, New Jersey. And I absolutely loved the Army, loved the Army right up until the day I got pregnant with my own child. And then my whole paradigm shifted. And I remembered before I signed on the dotted line, having a conversation with my dad and him asking me, because he was in the Vietnam War, and he asked me, could you shoot a kid running up to your foxhole? And up until I got pregnant, my answer was absolutely yes, I could. I could. And once I got pregnant, I could no longer. I would hesitate, which would put my entire squad at risk. And so I was able to opt out, and I opted out of the military. But I think what the military does is so important. And there are certain people who it's a good fit for, and there are certain people that it is not a good fit for. And my daughter would never make it in the military. She just wouldn't. But I absolutely loved it. I don't know if I answered your question or not. I kind of went off on a tangent there, didn't I?
No, it was interesting. And I am curious, you mentioned that as a kid you were legally blind, and I imagine that that would have to have been rectified to be admitted into basic training.
Yeah, glasses. So I don't remember my prescription now, but it's like at that time it was like 2400 or something like that. So I saw at 20 feet what most people identify at 400 feet. And wow. So that tells you how bad my vision was. And so I remember the day I got glasses and how all of a sudden there were people and there were trees and there were buildings and there were all these individual things, whereas before they had just been blotches of color. And it was just a phenomenal experience for me. And so, but it was 100% correctable with glasses. They were just very, very thick glasses. So.
Thank you. Well, back to the I just felt like I had to ask that before I forgot about your military background, because I thought that was fascinating. As someone who I don't see myself as, I try to take on challenges a little bit, but the military would definitely not. No, the person would be yelling at me and I'd be like, do it yourself. No.
Right. Yes, it takes a special person to thrive in the military environment for sure.
Yeah. I kind of feel like that's signing up for voluntary bullying.
Yeah,
basic training.
Is.
Yeah.
Especially basic training. Mm-hmm. Now, the rest of it is not so much, but basic training, they definitely. Their mission is to break the individual down and then put them into a cognitive unit as a team and to improve the strength of the entire team, not just one person. And that's what they do. And they do a very good job of it.
Now, there's another story in your book. Again, we're talking about the book Bullyproofing You, Improving Confidence and Personal Value from the Inside Out, and how your brother used to scare you and make you jump, and then you got into basic training and you had a very high startle response, and your commander, the guy.
Yep, drill sergeant.
The drill sergeant was changing that behavior. But then you got so good at reacting to that you actually, did you hit a kid that you were a teacher for?
I did. And the beautiful thing about working where I worked was I worked with a bunch of gang members. And this student was 18 years and older. I think he was almost 19. So he was an adult. I didn't hit this little kid.
Okay.
But he scared me. And I had been in my room grading papers, and I went to walk out, and he was standing right there at the door. And I opened the door, and he was standing there, and I dropped him. And I immediately ran into our counselor and went, oh my gosh, my job is over. I was freaking out. We went back to the classroom, and the student was in my classroom, and the counselor asked me if he wanted to press charges. And he's like, no way. I'm not telling anybody an old lady knocked me out. And so there are perks to working with gang members, right? Yeah. But I want to make it very clear, and I should probably go back and edit my book. He was an adult. He wasn't a little kid. Otherwise, you know, they would have gone ahead and pressed charges. I probably would have lost my job. But and since then, I don't react lethally when startled anymore. But anyways.
So part of your book is about kind of reconditioning our immediate response, and that takes practice. And we can have all of these comebacks and all these questions in our mind to kind of deflect the bully. But without practicing it and rewiring our mind, our brains, it's not going to be a whole lot of use.
Right. You have to relearn what it is that you have to reprogram yourself. We run on programs. And I mean, everything is a program for us. Once it becomes a habit, it becomes a program. And that lives in our subconscious, where we either, you know, and we don't even think about it anymore. Think about tying your shoe. Think about walking. All of those things that at some point you had to be taught, you don't even think about anymore, because it just happens. Typing on the computer, making a phone call, whatever it is, it's a habit. That means it's a program in your subconscious. So is the way you react and respond to others. So is the way you look at the world. You know, I'm sure you've heard of people ask, is the glass half full or is it half empty? You know, what is it? Well, in my opinion, it's totally full. It's just half full of water or liquid, and the other half is full of air. It just depends on how you look at it. And so you can retrain yourself to like people, to interact with people, to respond appropriately. The beginning of my book starts with a quote from Viktor Frankl, and it says, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space lies our power to choose. And in that choice lies our growth and our freedom. And so anytime there is a stimulus, then there is a response, but you choose your response. The problem is so many people just run off of programs that they're no longer choosing, they're just reacting. And so in the book, I talk to people and teach them how to reprogram themselves so they are reacting appropriately instead of inappropriately.
So where does, thank you for answering that, Jeannie. I'm just curious. I mean, we can change how we feel about people who engage in behaviors that one might call bullying.
Yes.
We can change how we feel about it. We can be less reactive. We can deflect it. We can redirect the person or whatever. But at what point is it important to be like, yo, that's not okay to talk to me like that?
Yes, absolutely. Beautiful question. And I get that a lot. And that comes in when you are in a relationship with the person, whether it's a spouse or a brother or a sister or a friend, but it's an ongoing relationship. You train people how to treat you. And so if they are treating you in a way that you don't appreciate, then you have some responses. You can either retrain them or you can leave, depending on where you're at. If you've been in the relationship for a while and it's a new behavior, then I suggest retraining or letting people know, hey, you know what? I don't allow that to happen. And, you know, I'm sorry you must have misunderstood, but I don't let people talk to me that way. Thank you for, you know, following and thank you for listening to me and appreciating how I feel. And so many times that's all it takes is just an awareness of what you will tolerate and what you won't tolerate. If it's just a one-off chance, you know, that you've bumped into somebody or in passing with somebody, my recommendation is to let it go and do a write and burn, get those emotions or those charged feelings out, and then let it go. It's the ongoing relationships where you need to retrain people how to treat you. And it's absolutely okay. I used to do this. I am a consummate learner. I absolutely love to learn. And anytime I learn something, now I take it to the stage or, you know, groups that I'm speaking to. Before, when I was a teacher, I would teach my family at home first, then I would go teach my students. And I would let them know, hey, guess what? I have upgraded my life. This is what I've learned. And so from now on, this behavior will no longer be tolerated. Foul language is one. I used to swear horribly. I had a potty mouth. And part of it was because I came from the military. The other part of it was because of where I taught. All my students use that kind of language. It was day-to-day language for them. And then when I transitioned from the classroom to the stage in 2012, I realized that even as pervasive as swearing is, for some people, it's very detrimental. And I would never, ever want to hurt someone. That is not my purpose at all. And so my home became a obscene word free home, swear free home, however you want to call that. And so I came home to my kids and I said, hey, guess what? I'm upgrading and this is what we're going to do from now on. You know, we're not going to swear anymore. And they were amazing. They switched faster than I did. We did a swear jar and I put a lot more money in that swear jar than anybody else did. So, but yeah, there are definitely things that you can reteach and relearn and reprogram.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that, Jeannie, because so swearing can be a trigger for some people. So you don't want to swear because you want to be respectful of other people. But then you're also teaching that we need to be responsible for how we feel about stuff. So where does, you know, us having to censor everything we say and the other person having personal responsibility for their own history and triggers?
Very good question. And I was just speaking, I just spoke at the Utah State Capitol last week. And in fact, actually February 12th, so it's almost been a week ago. And I had that same question from someone there. And I said, I'm so glad you asked, because the problem today is that so many people are censoring what they're saying for fear of offending somebody, that we have a very small minority controlling a majority because the majority is conscientious and wants to appease others. Mm-hmm. And so they won't say certain things. And so my advice is to say whatever it is that you feel inclined to say and then work out the reaction to it afterwards. I'm talking about when I'm speaking from stage. And I'm not one of those kinds that cannot swear on stage and swear in my everyday life. I am who I am. And so if I don't want to swear from stage, then I need to make sure that I'm not swearing in my day-to-day life. However, I will say things from stage that are very controversial. And, you know, there are a lot of people who don't agree with me. And that's okay. I can enjoy a steak. I can enjoy my lunch and sit right next to a vegetarian that doesn't believe in eating meat. Why? Because I respect them and I believe that they as a person gets to make that decision. The problem comes when others try to force their views on us and tell us, you can't say that, you can't think that way, you're infringing on my rights, when in the process, they're infringing on mine by not allowing me to speak my voice.
Okay, thank you. So it sounds like, Jeannie, you're not advocating for us censoring ourselves, but
no.
As you became a professional speaker, you now hold yourself to a higher standard.
Correct.
Okay.
And I have to admit, I fall short sometimes. But I get up, dust myself off, and start again.
Okay, good.
Every time I catch the flu, I dream of how many pounds I might lose.
CITR 101.9 FM and Discorder Magazine are excited to present Bridal Party's debut album, Too Much, coming out on Kingfisher Blues. Join us at the release show at the Waldorf Hotel Friday, August 23rd with opening acts Bored Decor, Babe Corner, and DJ Paisley Eva. Tickets are available at showpass.com, Red Cat, Neptune, and Zulu Records.
The 31st Annual Vancouver Queer Film Festival takes place this August 15th to 25th at various theaters. Join us for the best in independent queer cinema, performances, workshops, panel discussions, and parties. With over 100 films from 27 countries, the Vancouver Queer Film Festival is more enthralling and entertaining than ever. Tickets are on sale now at www.queerfilmfestival.ca.
So right now we are speaking with Jeannie Sisko-Meth. She's the author of Bullyproofing You, Improving Confidence and Personal Value from the Inside Out. And I wanted to ask you this question. We talked about the military. We talked about a bunch of other things. You mention and you seem to advocate for, if people are mistreating us, to maybe no longer associate with those people. Or if it is fixable, if it's someone close to us, we can say, hey, you know, maybe you misunderstood. This isn't okay with me. But I'm a quite sensitive person. And I have a difficult time. I also have a history of like trauma and abuse. So I have a difficult time sometimes determining, am I being overly sensitive? Or is this person actually knowingly mistreating me? And I'm wondering how you kind of advocate for people to determine that.
So my rule of thumb is kind of three strikes, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm associating with a friend that says something to me, we'll go back to swearing just because we've talked about that. And I'm associating with a friend of mine that I used to swear with. Then I will ask them, I'll say, hey, you know what? I've tried to upgrade my language. I would appreciate it if you would try not to swear around me. Now, if they're trying not to swear and one slips once in a while, I absolutely understand that. And I am forgiving. Now, if I've asked somebody to not call me certain names or to yell at me or to, you know, and they just continue to do it, then I let them know, hey, this is unacceptable behavior. I will not tolerate this. There will be a consequence. For example, my husband and I have rental properties, and one of our tenants was yelling and screaming at me the other day. And I let this person know that that would not be tolerated. You need to talk to me in a clear voice without yelling. And she continued to do it. And I said, if you do not stop now, I'm going to hang up. Then they continued to do it. So I hung up. And then they called me right back, yelling and screaming, and I hung up again. And by the third time, she was yelling and screaming, and I said, you need to get yourself in control. Call me back in an hour and a half and not before. And I hung up again. Now, I can't just go evict this person because they were yelling at me. However, I can require her to do all of her communique through writing instead of on the phone. And so I have guidelines and boundaries that I hold myself to once in a while, those boundaries are violated and I find myself having difficulties. And so I keep those boundaries in place. And then I make a choice. Do I talk to this person or not? Or do I require them to put everything in writing? And so I take it on an individual case-by-case basis. And I consider the person's heart and where they're coming from and if they're trying or not. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. And I'm all about setting boundaries. One of the things I'm having an issue with as I'm getting to know people, and you kind of have to feel people out and see if you want to be friends with them. And
yes.
So sometimes there's little behaviors that I'll let go and I'll just kind of notice. For example, of someone who I make plans with in advance and then they cancel on very short notice. You know, one time I'll let it go. It happens again. Well, this person, I've just decided, and we didn't even have a conversation about it. I've just decided, well, I'm not making any more plans for next Saturday.
Right.
You know, if we're both available and it happens to come together, cool, we'll get together. But I'm not going to rely on this person to show up because they just don't.
Right, right.
So there's that sort of thing where I'm not calling them on their behavior. I'm just sort of observing what I can trust them to do.
Yes.
But then as I'm getting to know this same person, I notice that they talk about other people a lot. So I wonder, and then I end up talking about other people when I'm with them. Like, it kind of brings out the worst in me. And so those sorts of things, I'm kind of wondering if maybe it just would be better off not even being friends with that person.
Not knowing both sides, just coming with what I know so far, that would be my belief and my recommendation. The problem is that we have been trained, right, to love our neighbor as ourselves. That's something that we want to do. We want to give people the benefit of the doubt. We want to, you know, we want to be loved, so we want to love others. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is there are some people who are toxic to me. They're not necessarily toxic people, but they are toxic to me. And so I'm very much in agreement with you on a schedule. I have a schedule and I keep my schedule. Once in a while, emergencies come up and I have to reschedule, but that's very infrequently. And there are some people who live in chaos, constant chaos. They're not bad people. They just live in chaos. And I don't associate on a regular basis with people who are in chaos unless they have hired me to be their mentor and to help them move out of chaos. So just be very aware of who you associate with and why you're associating with them, because you are absolutely the sum product of your five closest friends.
But then if you have, I don't know, I kind of almost feel like if I hold myself to these standards, which I think is absolutely a worthwhile thing to do, I end up just not being around anyone and spending a lot of time alone, because all of the people that are in my social circle, I'm like, well, I don't like that they do this. I don't like that they do that. And then I feel like, I don't know, should I just be lowering my standards?
So one of the most valuable things that my mom ever taught me was swing issues and flame issues. And a flame issue is something that, will it matter in 10 or 15 years? If so, then that's important. A swing issue is something that just kind of irritates me right now because I'm a little bit irritated anyways. Then I let those kinds of things go. But if somebody lies to me, that's a flame issue. Integrity is very, very important to me. And that's non-negotiable. But somebody who, you know, sucks their teeth, that's a swing issue. And so you kind of need to ask yourself, are these flame issues or swing issues? And then make a decision and start. I don't think anyone should ever lower their standards, because when you lower your standards, you settle. And when you settle, you lose sight of where you're going and your dreams. And this world is full of way too many people who settle and are not striving for dreams. We need more people wanting to improve themselves and move forward and achieve their dreams instead of asking someone to give it to them.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Jeannie. Well, we're just about out of time. We've been speaking with Jeannie Cisco Meth. She's the author of Bullyproofing You, Improving Confidence and Personal Value from the Inside Out. And if you want to get a free copy of the book, this show is being recorded in February of 2019. So right now, it is available for free. You just pay for shipping at bullyproofingyoubook.com. And if you're listening at a later date, you're welcome to go ahead and check it out and see if that offer is still available at bullyproofingyoubook.com. So we've covered a lot of stuff today, Jeannie. I'm wondering what you would like to leave listeners with.
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on your show, and also that if you can dream it, you can achieve it, right? Walt Disney said that. And stop letting the little bully in your head or the little bully outside of you stop you from becoming the best you that you possibly can be. Because we need more people living their dreams and changing the world for better.
Beautiful. Do you have a vision of, I mean, we have a lot of problems to deal with right now in the world. And I vacillate between loving and having hope for humanity and going, planet, just do us in already. So what is your vision for humanity's future?
My mission statement is bullyproofing the world one community at a time. Because if I can help one person and I can visualize the ripple effects from that one person going out, I absolutely believe that we can change this world. We can turn the Titanic, so to speak, but it's going to take everyone doing their part. It's going to take everyone moving forward and doing the best that they can where they're at. But I believe there's a lot of hope for humanity and hope for our country. We live in an absolutely incredible country, and I have hope and I have faith.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Well, thank you to Jeannie Cisco Meth. Again, her website is bullyproofingyoubook.com. And thank you for spending this hour with us. It has been such a pleasure to spend this time with you. I want to send you so much love. Be well. Namaste.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Good people of CITR land of Vancouver, of the Lower Mainland, not really. My name is Chris Arific.
August 23rd at the Toast Collective. That's Friday.
Or, as I like to call it, the day that I find out how unbelievably unpopular my show is.
We've only just begun.
Come celebrate 20 years of the Parts Unknown show with Chris Arific and special guests Garbage Dreams, Jerk Jails, and from Missoula, Montana, Wrinkles. It is also the release of Chris Arific's new album, Treats. That's Friday, August 23rd at the Toast Collective.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Jen Cusick from Luminate Wellness. We're going to be talking about appreciative inquiry. Just a little bit about Jen. She has been working as a mental health professional for more than 20 years. She's been creating curriculum, delivering trainings, and facilitating workshops that kick doors open in the minds of her clients. And she is a certified psychosocial rehabilitation practitioner, and she's an advanced level RAP facilitator through the Copeland Center. And she also trained me in how to facilitate RAP. And she's also a certified appreciative inquiry facilitator through the Center for Appreciative Inquiry. And she's a wife and mother of two little girls, one of whom regularly beats her at Uno despite being only 8 years old. Sounds like a smart kid.
She is. Yeah.
So let's talk about appreciative inquiry. What got you involved in appreciative inquiry in the first place?
Okay. So how it started for me is like my work within mental health. The movement that a lot of my work comes from is the recovery movement. And there's a lot of movement towards a strength-based approach. So a strength-based approach in the way we serve people, in the way that we look at where we want to go versus being tied to problems. So it's a pretty revolutionary paradigm shift within the mental health services. And honestly, not everyone is kind of on board with that, but it's really starting to change. The whole system is starting to change towards a movement more towards strength-based approach rather than medical model problem-based services. So years ago, I was just, and I look it up and I read it and then I read about something else.
FM out of the illustrious nest at UBC. This is the Parts